Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the roundtable for this Wednesday, the 3rd of March. Very nice to have you with us on this day. A little sunshine, so that helps things, and we hope that it is sunny wherever you are, whether actual sun or just sun that is emanating from the life that you are experiencing at this particular moment. We have a lot to talk about this morning, and we will do so in just a moment. A reminder that you can always join in on the program, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org, and we'd love to hear from you. That's all it takes, panel@wamc.org. We ask that you keep your letters short and to the point and on topic, and that you don't include links or attachments. And okay, now I know it realizes that I'm sending like a really long list of rules, but it isn't that hard. Just keep it short, to the point, and proofread them before you send them. So because sometimes people use abbreviations, and as I quickly go through them, I don't know what you're saying. So that's all. That's all we ask. Now, I will just tell you that we are having we're not really having a technical difficulty. We're having we had to reboot some of our equipment so that we can get everybody on board. So because of that, that's happening as we speak. And was necessary. So we're doing that. So that means that the only person on the line with me right now is Dean of the College of Emergency Preparedness, Homeland Security, and Cybersecurity at the University at Albany, Bob Griffin. And what's interesting about that is I think for at least 2 years, Bob has silently prayed that this would happen where he'd be the only person on the panel.
This is the result of good preparedness and planning, Joe.
So it's you and me, Bob.
Speaking from deep within the bunker.
That's right. Well, so Alan, Rosemary Armeo, and Chris Churchill will all be with us just momentarily. We're just getting everybody set, and we had a glitch this morning, and we have a wonderful engineering team that is working very hard to get it back online, and they will, and we'll get everybody together. So while that happens, we welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, and I look at this, I don't know how you look at it, Bob, I look at it as you and I getting to spend some good old-fashioned quality time with each other.
You know, the only thing that could be better for me, Joe, if we were in the studio and we're able to wave it Ray through the glass.
So yeah, that's right.
I am thrilled to have time with you today.
Well, it's very nice, and I'm very glad you are here, because otherwise it's a lot easier than just talking to yourself. So here we go. Well, I guess, you know, there's a lot of different places, and I'm curious as to, for you and in your position, what of the stories that are happening today that you find most interesting that you'd like to maybe talk about at first? You'd like
Boy,
a crack at?
There is so much going on. You know, I thought it was incredibly interesting what the FBI director said yesterday. I've been following that very closely.
So yesterday, go ahead.
I'm sorry.
I was going to ask about the FBI director, because Christopher Wray was on Capitol Hill yesterday talking, and basically said that domestic terrorism threat is metastasizing in the U.S. So, to you, what does that? I assume you don't disagree with him.
No, not at all.
So, what does that mean?
So, what I took that as is that this movement that is trying to invalidate the legitimacy of the election. We saw this with Trump. We saw it again with the Electoral College. We saw it again on January 6th. That the movement isn't looking at the facts. Isn't interested in hearing the truth. That this has become much more cultish than before, and the positions are hardening. Which makes it incredibly dangerous. And when you start to think about the fear of violent domestic terrorism, like we saw with the insurrectionists, this is going to be a huge concern for law enforcement across the country.
I know this seems obvious to many of us, but to hear the director of the FBI say that the view of what happened at the Capitol on January 6th, in his view, was domestic terrorism. I think for many of us, but to hear that said and declared, I think was important. The other thing that was interesting to me, Bob, was that two 1,000 domestic terrorism inquiries in recent years that the FBI has been working on. That's a huge number.
It is. And I think there's a couple points that the listeners need to remember. One is that this didn't just occur overnight. This has been building over time. And the issue of the radicalized, particularly the far right militias, is something that we have dealt with for a number of years, even going back prior to Timothy McVeigh and the Oklahoma City bombing at the Amara building. What you're seeing, though, is they're much more cohesive. They've been able to sort of create this gravitational pull because the presidency had basically under Trump became the bully pulpit that legitimized their philosophies. If you think about Charlottesville, Joe, you think about the good people on both sides.
Right.
And that simply acted to empower and continue to empower this movement and it creates even more difficulties because they do really believe everything that Trump is saying.
I believe that Rosemary Armeo is with us, investigative journalist.
I am.
Very nice.
I'm
Thank
here
you for
and I'm listening to you.
I know you've been in technological purgatory for a little while, so it's good to have you on the program. Thank you very much for your patience. And as our wonderful engineering team goes through everything and gets everybody on the line, so thank you very much. We're working on the other two as we speak, so we'll get to that in a moment. Bob and I have been talking about what happened yesterday on Capitol Hill and the FBI director speaking about domestic terrorism. Your thoughts on that, Rosemary?
Well, it was good to finally hear someone who truly knows what they're talking about and what happened on January 6th out there. He did a lot of debunking of Republican baloney. No, it wasn't Antifa. No, it wasn't people posing as Trump supporters. It was Trump supporters who did this, and I appreciate that. I continue to wonder how in the heck Christopher Wray held his job under the Trump years. And he just told the truth. I don't know that it'll do any good. Republicans seem to have stopped listening to reason and facts. But I was glad somebody was putting it on the record.
And it's interesting, Joe, if I could just toss this at everybody.
Sure.
Shouldn't all of us be Antifa? I mean, shouldn't all of us be anti-fascist? I mean, to me, this idea that being anti-fascist is a bad thing. I mean, it's sort of in my blood in the sense that, I support the idea of our republic and the Constitution. And what fascism stands for is none of that. So I always laugh when I hear people throwing stones at Antifa because it's something that all of us should be.
Yes, Antifa.
Well,
go ahead, Rosemary.
I think Antifa has become a boogeyman for the right. And so whenever there's violence now, it's this mythical leftist violence that they point to. And it's not an organization like the KKK or the Proud Boys. Or any of the other actual named and real groups on the right. It's just this mythical, it's kind of an idea, as Bob said, it's an idea that we should be against it, but there's not a group, they don't have a headquarters, they're not armed. And so to point this as whenever there's trouble that this is the cause of it is just so bogus.
This is anecdotal because I don't have the names in front of me, but in one of the reports during the impeachment trial, there was a video in which some of the those who were storming the Capitol came in and they said, where's Antifa? And the police officers, the Capitol police officers that they were talking to said, I think you're it. Like, you're the only one here causing problems. Like, I don't know. you seem to be the issue right now, which is interesting. So where do we go from here? We talked about this, Rosemary, yesterday. This is going to be a long investigation, Bob. So as we kind of peel the layers here, what do you think the ultimate takeaway, I'm not asking you to predict what the ultimate takeaway will be, but ultimately, what are we trying to get to, and is it worth the wait?
So it is something that I think is worth the wait, because I think it has to be done carefully and thoughtfully, because otherwise you start to run the risk of legitimate political discourse running into problems. And again, sort of the belief in the core philosophies of the country, you know, this idea of freedom of speech, but there's also freedom from speech. What I'm hoping that the council and commission can do is not only look at the organizations themselves, better understand where the funding is coming from. I am increasingly concerned that entities that are unfriendly to the nation are actually secretly funding these organizations. So I'm looking for funding. I'm looking to better understand how they radicalize people. So what are the mechanisms? What are the techniques so that we can understand so we can actually start to combat them? Because this is occurring, and not only in adult populations, it also occurs I know it's occurring in the prison system. It's also occurring with students. So making sure we understand all of these points is really, really important. This is a clear, in my mind, Joe, it's a clear and present danger to our democracy.
Chris Churchill joins us now, Times Union columnist, and we have gotten him on the line. As I said to Rosemary, thank you for being in technological purgatory for a little while. We appreciate it. We're glad you were here. And
good morning.
It's good to hear your voice. We thank you for your patience as our crew works through all the difficulties here. So we've been talking about the FBI director testifying yesterday, getting to the bottom of what happened on the 6th of January, 2021, and the storming of the Capitol. Any thoughts you would like to share with us on that subject?
Well, I don't know what's already been said, but
don't let that stop you.
It was brilliant, Chris. I really think you need to go back.
Yeah, I'm sure it was.
It's like Family Feud during the double money match. You know, they take you off into a soundproof booth, and then you come in and you give your answers.
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously, it was both interesting and disturbing. His thoughts about the rise in domestic terrorism, I thought, were concerning. I thought it was a little bit disjointed in that he said that they had been aware kind of this rise in domestic terrorism for quite some time now and were concerned about it. But then if that was the case, how were they left so unprepared for the Capitol riot? You know, those two things didn't seem to connect in my mind. If you're aware of the problem, then prepare for it.
Right.
But I'm sure some brilliant person already made that point.
A lot of points were made, but I think it's good. I mean, it's interesting of what everybody has to say about it. I'm curious as to one of the things that we have been talking about, Chris, is, you know, sort of where we get to with all of this. Rosemary, I know that you have expressed right along some concern that this is a report that will grow dust on the shelf and little will come out of it, while you believe we actually should be getting prosecutors involved. And I think we've discussed, you know, the possibility of doing both. Do things like this with Christopher Wray talking and as you say, getting to the truth and debunking some of the baloney, does that help in leading perhaps to charges being filed?
No, not in my mind, not at all. It, of course, a lot depends on Merrick Garland, but I listened to Bob, and it's all, as usual, I feel like standing up and saluting when he talks. It's also noble, and as it should be, and I don't see any of it really happening.
Bob won't mind, by the way.
This is a whole bunch of people talking in a congressional hearing, and no one's listening to everybody else. They're just preparing their next speech. And it's going to be long-winded, and we'll go on and on and on. And as a result, I predict we'll get increased spending and increased enhanced security at the Congress and little else. And that's not what's needed. There was a system in place, and it failed. And I don't see anybody really getting at that failure. I don't think anybody can in Congress. I think this is an act for the Justice Department and prosecutors. I still haven't seen anything that changes my mind on that.
Yeah, and Joe, I'm in complete agreement with what Rosemary is saying. I actually think we need to separate these two. I do think that a team of prosecutors need to be brought in, and that needs to be expedited in the commission work, which then can go a little bit more slowly and be more thoughtful, can then continue on. I do think we should decouple it. I mean, the same way we decoupled the 9/11 commission, you think about it, we continue to move forward. However, we were able to weave a lot of the recommendations from the commission into our policy and doctrines.
Okay, Bob, that commission was in 2001. Let's look at the one more recent on the CIA. That was an amazingly newsy and horrifying report, and nothing came out of it.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely correct, and this always is the risk of the commissions, is that they will be ignored. At the same time, they are data points that hopefully can lead to least some movement in D.C.
Let's we're going to pause and take a break. I think we have Alan on the line now, so I think we have the whole crew, so that's good. Thanks to the wonderful engineering team and Rob and Stacy and Mike for getting everybody on the line this morning. Many thanks. We will hear the results of all of that when we come back after break. We welcome your comments on this and many other issues. We have a ton of topics to discuss this morning. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Chris Churchill, and Bob Griffin making up the program this morning. And again, we do welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org. We will continue the conversation and get everybody involved after this news from the BBC. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Wednesday morning. It is the 3rd of March. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Chris Churchill, and Bob Griffin all making up the panel. We're actually still connecting with Alan, and he'll be with us in just a moment. So we go to some of our letters that we have on this subject. Lynn writes, I'm not naive, and I know that alt-right movements have always been around throughout history. However, what do we attribute this huge rise that goes beyond our country, not just Trump, but even what's going on in Europe? Which I think is a really good point. Rosemary, let me direct that to you, because given your experience in covering the world, of the fact of, yes, this extremism is not just within our ranks.
Yeah, it is, and it is worldwide indeed, and it is not new to this time in history either. We have periodically fallen back on the same kinds of phenomena. It has to do with fear. It has to do with pressures, and we're seeing that from dangerous things happening, climate change and increased weird weather and lack of resources. All of those things make people nervous. It makes them worried. And so what do? They tend to rely on strong leaders. Authoritarian leaders can be comforting. And I'm sorry, I'm hearing background noise.
No, go ahead. You're okay.
I'm okay. All right. Yep. And so I think that's what's happening. I think we're in one of those times when nationalism is on the rise, where authoritarianism is on the rise, and then there's a reaction to it. So it leads to violence and just a polarization that that we have not seen in a while in this country, but certainly it's been happening in Europe for the last 20 years. We've seen increases like this, and now it's in the Philippines. It's horrible. Hungary, Poland, places that saw a liberalization and an opening of the society now are going the opposite direction.
I think we have the full crew with us this morning. Alan, how are you?
I hope so. Well, the one thing Dave Gillespie taught me all those years ago is the last time you should panic is when you feel like panicking. And so, the phones have been working well. We've managed to, as you say, Joe, thanks to the good people in our engineering division, to get it all going again. Now, can you hear me better now?
We can. Mm-hmm. Very
good,
much so.
Good. That's great. Okay, so we're on the telephone as opposed to what we call the tie line.
The tie line.
But the but the tie line, I believe, is now working. Something very strange happened here.
The gremlins. The gremlins have been around. Well, we've been talking about the FBI. We've been talking about Christopher Wray testifying yesterday in regards to the Capitol attack on January 6th. I'm going to probably, we'll take a break and move on to other subjects, but is there anything you would like to say about that prior to the move along?
Well, I thought Wray was extremely well-spoken, as we have said. Nevertheless, I don't think that the ball was fully being carried by the FBI. I think they needed to do more. The fact is that this raid on the Capitol went unimpeded. So that while I thought Wray was terrific in the way he handled his questions and the way he answered these guys, and I was particularly interested in how the bad guys, Hawley and Cruz, were behaving, which was very sedate on the questions. It still comes back to the fact that there was a systematic failure here, and that needs to be looked at.
We got this letter from Mitchell, who says, "You know, you've answered your own question." I think this was, I forget actually who asked this question, but Mitchell says, "You've answered your own question of how did Wray keep his job? 2,000, I guess this was you, Rosemary, 2,000 domestic terrorism cases, no arrests, then no response to Trump's organized demonstration and riot and march to attempted murder, all that in shouty caps. The Republican concept of gathering support, very basic. They just say everything is a hoax, and the others think they are better than you. As Larry David may say, Republicans are the spite party." Rosemary?
Yeah, that may be. I guess Wray was walking a tightrope, wasn't he? That he had to be honest and yet also appease Trump. That's the same thing that all of his appointees handled. And he may also have benefited from the fact that after Comey and whoever the other guy was, he was the third FBI guy there, and it would have been really uncomfortable for Trump to have let him go. So I think he took advantage of that as well. And what could he have done? What could the FBI director have done for Trump protesters? That I'm still chewing on. I guess he got asked that yesterday. Why weren't you there out in force?
Right.
But I'm not sure that the FBI should be out at protests if they're really legitimate political protests. So I don't know. I don't know.
Paul writes.
I like Wray. Do you?
I like them. But I think that there's a systematic failure, and he is the head guy, is responsible for some of that. And I do think, Rosemary, I don't think there's any question that there were FBI agents out there during that time. So what did they know? When did they know it? That becomes very important.
Paul writes to us and says, "Bob is so right. We should all be anti-fascist. This Antifa myth is a marketing creation of the corporate oligarchs to provide cover for the actual fascist activities being committed by the Republican Party. Why is the corporate media and WAMC not reporting the reality that the Capitol insurrection on January 6th was carried out by 100% by card-carrying members of the Republican Party? What a whitewash of the culpability of the Republican Party." Alan, I'll let you take that one.
Well, thank you for that, Joe. I really appreciate your doing that. You know, look, the Republican Party started out at 90% in favor of Trump. It is lowered. It is lowered so that we're seeing 60s and 50s now. Nevertheless, he has a stronghold on the a throat hold on the Republican Party, and they know it. And he doesn't give a damn about them. He only cares about him. And we all know that also. So that isn't going to change here. Whether or not there are enough people or enough Biden mistakes, because in the next 4 years he can make mistakes, and frankly, in the next 2 years he can make mistakes here that will come back and haunt him. So is there a Republican Party? I don't know. I think right now there is what's left of this ragtag group of people. And that's where they are.
I thought you would comment on the why is the corporate media and WAMC not reporting the reality that the Capitol insurrection was carried out by the Republican Party?
I think the I'll speak up for the corporate media. I think that much of the corporate media has been pretty clear about that. That it was it wasn't an official Republican Party action, but it was a pro-Trump rally that led to the riot on the Capitol, and that, you know, a lot of Republican politicians, including Elise Stefanik and Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley, played into it and contributed to it. I think that's. I don't see that narrative hidden anywhere. I think that's right out there in the open. Whether people choose to believe it or not is another question.
Mm.
We go to David, who says, what's the difference between, I think this may be a setup of a joke. What's the difference between Jim Jones and Donald Trump? Trump charges for the Kool-Aid. I think that was David's thought there. Hope that landed well.
That one.
Yeah, it's, bring it up at parties. It's a killer. It's good. And
Lord, I mean, I'm still in shock about that golden idol that was made in Mexico of Trump. I'm so kind of fascinated and horrified at the same time, and I keep thinking it's a bad sitcom until I realize that it's our life.
Well, right. let's take a break. When we come back, we have many more stories to discuss, and we will do so. We've got our whole group here, Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Chris Churchill, and Bob Griffin. We will continue with all of that. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org. We'll do so right after this break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. We started off by talking about the hearing that took place in which the FBI director, Christopher Wray, spoke and was at a hearing on looking into the storming of the Capitol on January 6th. I have to say, for me last night, a large consumer of cable news, I was surprised last night in trying to find out about the hearing because the airwaves were filled, absolutely filled with stories, very, very long entire segments on Andrew Cuomo. And actually less on Fox than on CNN and MSNBC, interestingly enough. But this story keeps going, and the headline in the New York Times today is Cuomo losing power and allies as the crisis deepens. The governor faced more calls for his resignation and a Republican congressman and Trump backer Lee Zeldin said he was exploring a challenge to him next year. Of course, the governor up for re-election for a fourth term next year. Meanwhile, there were the stripping of his emergency powers that took place yesterday. And then, of course, that's the leaders of both chambers that struck a deal to impose limits and additional oversight in Mr. Cuomo's pandemic era powers. And that was the latest rebuke of the governor by members of his own party, a way for the legislature to flex its muscle and reprimand him for withholding data on nursing home deaths and more symbolically, the sexual harassment allegations. That from the New York Times. Alan, your thoughts on the stripping of the powers?
Well, I've expressed them before because this is nothing new. We know that they were going to do it. And we know that that Cuomo hasn't always been nice to these guys, and they're getting even. I don't think there's any question about that. So that tough guy Andrew proves to be his own worst enemy in all of this. Will he resign? No. Did I hear a guy, for some strange reason, National Public Radio chose some guy this morning who said he thought he would resign as their expert in all of this when WAMC's group is so well versed in this and Ian Pickus and his wonderful news division is out there? Yeah, I heard something I didn't like at all, and I'll take it up with NPR as I often do because I think their reporting has been fairly weak on all of this. But I can tell you now that. That unless somebody else comes forward and with something more convincing than what they've got, I doubt that Cuomo will quit. Why would he? He's tough guy Andrew, and he doesn't do that kind of thing. Do I think he's his own worst enemy? I do. I think he's made this bed and he's got to sort of sleep in it. But it's the press and the press and the political cohorts of Cuomo are unabated, and they will continue to do what they're doing. And either they will be, you know, the old saying about you gotta kill, if you're gonna go after the king, you better kill him.
Yeah.
I think that's probably true here. So I don't know what's gonna happen, but I know one thing. NPR should do a better job of picking their people. Yesterday, I had Karen DeWitt on, and she was great, as of course our Karen DeWitt. Today, not so good.
So, Chris, what do you think when it comes to resignation?
Yeah, I don't think he'll resign either. I mean, unless he's forced to. I mean, if a few more people come forward, he may be forced to. But I think if we know anything about Andrew Cuomo, it's that he'll hang on to this as long as he possibly can, and he may never appear in public again, but he's not going to resign.
Well, that's the thing. There was an article in New York Magazine about that. He's laying very low and sitting in the office and stewing. So that is that, which is very unlike this governor, right? Because he's usually front and center.
Yeah, and I also don't know. I don't know how he can run for re-election with all this hanging over. There needs to be. He almost needs to be. I think he needs to be cleared really to run for re-election. I don't know how he. I mean, who's going to stand with him? How does a Democrat run for re-election if other party leaders are not going to want to be with him, or not going to want to endorse him, or if he's, you know, I think he's going to have trouble raising money, although he has plenty to run already, I believe. But I think it's going to be really difficult to. I do think this will probably end his political career in some sense. I don't think he'll resign or be impeached, but I think a fourth term looks increasingly unlikely.
It does.
Do you agree with that, Alan?
No, I don't. Yeah. I think he's going to run. I think he's going to run. And one thing that has convinced me of that, Chris, is that every time there's a head-to-head poll of him versus anyone, he clobbers them. Now, that was basically before all of this unfolded. There's no question about that. Nevertheless, Lee Zeldin, one of those guys from Long Island, you know, one of these, you know, not much heard from people running against them, they're going to lose. Now, remember that Mario got beaten in a bad year, by the way. It was a very bad year. Not by that much, by George Takei, who survived for three terms after that. So they could get what we call a hoo-hee, who looks cleanish and who might run against them. But if nothing else comes up, I think Andrew is going to run. I don't think he's going to be deterred.
Well, some of that was breaking up for me. I don't know if it was breaking up for other people.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. I think we got to work on your line again, Alan. But we'll figure it out during the break.
But I will say that it is true that polls.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Chris, and then Bob. Go ahead.
Yeah. Okay, Chris.
Well, I heard Alan say something about polls and how the governor continues to crush people and all that is true, but there is also a lagging effect. You know, a lot of this stuff, it's just been a drumbeat in recent weeks, and you're looking at multiple scandals. You're looking at an FBI investigation. You're looking at all these stories about bullying, and there are more and more that come out every day.
Right.
You know, add sexual assault allegations or not harassment allegations onto all that, and it's just I think the baggage gets heavier and heavier. And I think he would be very, very vulnerable to a woman candidate. You know, I don't know who that candidate would be. I don't, you know, but, you know, just James or somebody like that. I was trying to think if we've seen somebody run. I mean, Trump is one example, but I think that's kind of an outlier. If we've seen somebody run for re-election in the Me Too era who had this kind of stuff hanging over their head and was able to succeed, and I can't come up with an example, but I can't come up with a it's just so fresh too that I don't know that we don't have many examples.
Bob Griffin.
Yeah, I mean there certainly is a feeling of blood in the water right now, and they're sort of, you know, like sharks. There is a sort of political frenzy going on. So I don't discount the fact that politics is playing a huge role. And where I think Alan was absolutely correct is that
This is payback, and he's also correct to say that if you're going to shoot at the king, you better kill the king. I actually think that the governor has a really good chance of weathering this, particularly if he's running against somebody like Lee Zeldin, who I think still has to answer for his support for the insurrection and his support for Trump. And I think the opposition to Cuomo is going to come from the left, which is going to make a lot of people uncomfortable. And in his own way, you know, Cuomo is almost the perfect balance for the sort of bipolar nature of New York. If you really think about how liberal some of our legislators are and so how conservative others are. So I do think that he can survive this, and it's still he's not up again for what, 2 years, 3 years?
No, next year.
No, he's up next year.
Next year. 22.
Okay, 22. So, okay. Yeah.
Go ahead,
Rosemary. Can I get in there for a minute?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's doing my heart good to hear all these men sitting around talking about the governor and his sex harassment charges. I'm glad that this issue has risen to this. I think the press is in somewhat of a frenzy. It's like, oh, wow, finally something to sink our teeth into now that Trump is gone. And just as quickly as Cuomo went from hero to cad, he can go back again. As you point out, he's not due to run again for some time. The candidates who are coming forward, Lee Zeldin is no surprise. He was exploring this before the governor got into trouble. He is gross. I can't imagine him winning in New York State. And there is no attractive woman candidate, with the exception of Letitia James, who is she really going to run, or is she going to stay and keep working on the Trump case, which probably professionally is more interesting to her. And on top of all that, we can't make a judgment on what's going to happen because we don't know where it ends yet. If two more women come forward, then we should be having this conversation. But right now, Cuomo can weather all of this.
Yeah, I'm not so sure. I mean, yeah, the point I think that is correct, Rosemary, is that we just don't know where this is going to go. I mean, correct. If more women come forward, he's in real trouble. If the FBI, if that FBI investigation goes anywhere, he's in real trouble. If there's more stories of bullying, he's in real trouble. You know, I don't think it should go. An anecdote that kind of got lost in all the sexual harassment allegations was the story that the Times Union reported over the weekend about the bullying that Judith Inc endured.
Right.
I mean, that stuff is outrageous, that she would be bullied for having the temerity to suggest that people in Hoosick Falls shouldn't drink their poisonous water is beyond outrageous. I mean, and these stories are piling up and piling up and piling up. And I understand that the governor...
Chris, this is column talk. This is column talk. This is not how people think. This governor has weathered.
That's column talk.
This governor has weathered his top aides being sent to prison for corruption that he most certainly had to have known about and been involved in. And he went through that with like butter. So this is nothing that he talked mean to people who were opposing him. Wow, that's going to really upset people.
You know,
he was horrible.
No. Rosemary, let's not dismiss this as talking mean to people or being a tough guy. Threatening people's careers, threatening to destroy people is Nixonian stuff. It's dangerous behavior from a chief executive, and we shouldn't tolerate it. And maybe that is column talk, and maybe people don't really care about it.
Oh, I think people care about it. And, you know, one of the things I think was lost in the Judith Inc story is that, and maybe this is just me and maybe it wasn't lost, but she was a federal official. I mean, this wasn't a state office. He was basically saying to a member of the Obama administration that you have a lot going on with us and don't screw this up or you'll pay the price with other things that we're dealing with the administration on. That to me was the takeaway of that story. I mean, the bullying we all know about, right? But I thought that was chilling in the fact that not only do we see this at a state level, but we see it at a federal level as well.
Yeah. And yeah. Joe, can I pivot just slightly? And one thing that does concern me, there's two things that concern me. One is that I've always felt that the legislature kind of gave up their fiduciary responsibilities I thought it was smart because it allowed New York to move quickly. And if the legislature is going to reinsert themselves in this process, they need to be held responsible, and they need to be put in. They need to put in place the ability to react quickly to changes in order to deal with COVID, because we're not done this roller coaster yet. So that's one point. Now, the good part to me, though, is that I've always felt that the legislature should have played a larger role in how the state deals with this crisis, because it's a crisis for all of us. And I'm just really worried about our capacity as a state to respond quickly if there aren't clear lines and responsibilities.
When it comes to this issue, I think it's we're going to take a break here in a second, but when we come back, let's talk a little bit more. We have a lot of letters on this as well. People have questions because there's many, many issues. Rosemary, I haven't even asked you. You did mention Lee Zeldin, but I'm wondering about other people. I want to get Alan's thoughts on that too. Other people who are lining up and expressing interest. So let's just pause. We'll take a break. And when we come back, we will continue. We welcome your thoughts. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC. I feel you, Chris. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Rosemary Armeo, Chris Churchill, Bob Griffin make up the panel. Alan Chartok with us as well. We are still having some trouble with the connection. So as soon as we get that fixed, we will bring Alan back into the fold here. Panel at WAMC.org if you would like to join us. Panel at WAMC.org. We have a lot of letters on this issue. So let's go to Polly, who says Cuomo has been a bully, but we needed a bully to deal with the virus. Now that she is of no use to Trump, Elise's Elise Stefanik, new mission to curry favor is to eliminate Cuomo as a candidate for federal employment.
May I point out that after all this discussion this morning about Cuomo, he is not even in the top two of the worst governors of the state of states in the United States right now. I'd place him third.
That's a good point. That's a good point. In the ranking, you make a good point. Alan, you're back, I believe.
I hope so.
Okay, good.
Now what you may hear now is not my voice busting up, but the tomato that is lodged in my throat.
Well, that is painted quite an image, but that's all right. We'll put up
right,
with that.
Right,
that's
right.
Fine. All right, let's go to letters here. John says Hillary Clinton would be a viable female candidate for governor in 2022. Bill says, please ask Alan if he thinks.
Wow.
What?
I never thought of that. I would vote for her.
Would she want it?
Hell no.
Yeah. Like, why do you need that? Bill says, please ask Alan if he thinks Cuomo should resign or be impeached or nothing at all. Alan?
I say we wait and see what happens. I think he has every right to run again. I think right now, based on what we know and the people who have come forward, there's no question that he will run again. That's what I think. Not some guy from a minor league station in the NPR constellation.
So, which brings us to Harry's letter, who says, I, for one, would like to hear more about Alan's criticism of NPR for not giving WAMC a larger role in the coverage of Andrew's debacle.
Yeah, you sound a little salty. I just want to make sure I understand that.
Yeah.
We have always had problems with NPR. I have described NPR as Robin Hood. As you may remember, in The 2,000-Year-Old Man, did you know Robin Hood? Yes, I knew him. Yes, I knew him. Is it true you robbed from the rich and gave to the poor? They asked the old man. And he says, no, he robbed from the rich and he robbed from the poor and he kept everything. And that's NPR. We pay NPR approaching $1 million a year, and they have nothing but self-serving during that time. Now, do I think that'll annoy some people? Yes, but that's the way it is.
So in this particular instance, we should note that I think you mentioned this, but this is what the letter writer was asking, that Noel King was on this morning and talked to a reporter from WMHT television about the move to revoke the governor of his emergency powers. And so that is what you were speaking of specifically.
I was. And then they asked him whether he should resign. He said, yes. What kind of reporting is that? You know, when you ask me that question, I say that's up to Cuomo. And I think if others come forward, and there's been a hint that somebody else may come forward, if something else happens, if the shoe drops again, he may have to go. But right now, and they may know what they're facing. But right now, I say, you know, we have an electoral system. Let's see what happens. What Cuomo does. I'm not saying this is a vote of confidence for Cuomo. Believe me, I'm not. I don't believe that that's what's called for here. I do think he's a tough guy. He's always been a tough guy. My name for him is Andrew Tough Guy, and that's been picked up by a number of people. So let's just see what happens.
So, Alan, we were talking about while we were getting you back on about
incapacitated. Yes,
yes, that's right. When you were floating free in space for a little while there, but we were talking about Lee Zeldin, but those who are lining up now and saying, "Well, I'm going to explore a run." Go ahead.
No, I don't see it happening. Lee Zeldin will get creamed, as I think Rosemary has pointed out so perceptively. You know, here's a Trumper, basically a Trumper in Blue State, New York, where people hate the guy's guts, Trump's, that is. And he's going to have to be defensive about all the things he said and done. You know, sure, people get ambitious, but Cuomo could only pray that he's the opponent and that Cuomo's still in it. And as far as Tish James is concerned, a very qualified, important woman. I think Rosemary, somebody said she may want to carry through on what she's doing up to now. But, you know, if you're attorney general, almost governor, AG, you usually want to go to the top. So I would expect if she sees a path, she'll do it. She'll run again.
So, interesting, we got a letter a moment ago, Chris Churchill, about the fact that Elise Stefanik is being very loud about the governor and certainly being very tough on him, so that he would be taken out of the national picture. But what about the state picture, which many people have saying that Elise Stefanik is eyeing the governor's office?
Yeah, I mean, I think she would run into the same problems that Alan was describing with Lee Zeldin, where you have a state that's very much anti-Trump, and you have candidates who were very much pro-Trump. I just, that might be a good background for the Republican primary, even in New York State. But I just think it would be poison in the general election. I think if Cuomo, some of this is silly because we've had three allegations in 4 days or whatever it was, and we just don't know what else is out there. We don't know what's coming. We just, everything, it's very difficult to speculate about what will happen next year when we don't know what's going to happen this week. You know, I mean, but I suspect that if he did run again, he'd be much more vulnerable in the Democratic primary than he would be from a Republican. Although there are candidates out there, more moderate Republicans like a Mark Molinaro, who could be a threat. But Elise Stefanik and Lee Zeldin, I just don't see as serious candidates.
Rosemary?
Well, I actually have to say that I would love to see Elise Stefanik running in New York City, that insurrectionist Trumper in the liberal heartland. That would be so cool. I don't think she could win. I just can't see that at all. And you know, we're also overlooking Andrew's appeal. The stuff he's done that's come out so far is creepy. It's to young women, but he still has that Bill Clinton thing, which is an appeal, especially to older women who are not as don't see themselves as vulnerable, I think, as young women. He has a tremendous appeal still with this straw man stuff that it's toxic. I certainly, please do not write and say I'm condoning him or I like it. That's not true. But it doesn't knock him out. It did not knock out Bill Clinton. It did not knock out Donald Trump. Men with reputations like his still have a following, even among women voters. And he's formidable in the state. He is, until the trouble, he was a hero. And he still has a lot of power that I think that we are neglecting while we're talking about his current difficulties.
Alan?
You know, Rosemary, I have to say, I'm getting a ton of mail. It's all pro Cuomo. I mean, I think I had two that were not. And so you're right. There are an awful lot of people who just think this is much ado about nothing, who keep saying that to me. Now, I don't know what your mail looks like, guys. Chris Churchill, I don't know whether your mail is, you know, more antithetical to Cuomo based on the fact that, you know, you've been known in the past to take a tough line with Andrew. So maybe I'm getting it for one reason and you're getting it for another. I don't know.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I used to say before the coronavirus that Andrew Cuomo was the one politician you could criticize and nobody would write to defend him. That has obviously changed. There are people who I think do write to the. I mean, my mail is probably more anti Cuomo than pro Cuomo, but I do get people who defend him, and I never did before. But to go to Rosemary's point, I don't think the Bill Clinton comparison is a good one. I mean, the Me Too has changed a lot. Our culture has changed a lot. I don't think we tolerate bullying the same way that we did. I don't think we tolerate sexual harassment the same way that we did, nor should we. And I don't know. I think it's too early to say how this is going to play with voters, but we're a very different country than we were in the 1990s. And the Democratic Party, especially, I mean, you could point to Trump and say that, yeah, these kind of guys still get elected. And that's certainly true. But New York is not the country as a whole. And the Democratic Party in New York is not the Democratic Party of the country in the whole. So I don't know about that.
Bob?
Truly, I wish that you were right. Truly, I wish you were right, Chris, but I don't see the evidence of it. We've got a new Republican representative in, where is it, North Carolina, and there's stories out about his treatment of women. Ronnie Jackson, the former President Trump's doctor, who is a representative from Texas, there's a big story out today about he was drinking in the Pentagon and making comments about women. Government is filled with powerful men who do not treat women correctly, and we do not punish them. I don't see any evidence of that.
Yeah, well, again, I mean, neither of those people were put in power by the Democratic Party in liberal New York. So I just don't know that those examples are necessarily relevant. I mean, you may be right. We'll see. But again, it all depends on, you know, if we don't hear any more stories from now until Election Day, then yeah, he may very well be fine. But, you know, we've heard three in a week, and it's hard to believe that there aren't more out there.
Well, you know, I was supposed to interview Jesse McKinley, who is all over the place right now. He's the major star for The New York Times. He's been on television. Who knew what he looked like? But now you know what he looks like. And he's a great guy. But we canceled the program because of my phone problems this morning. He said it's better to do it tomorrow. There could be more.
I
considered that to be a pregnant concept.
You know, and I've heard Andrew Cuomo described as tough about 37 times this morning. Does a tough guy hide when the going gets a little rough? I mean, where is he? Well, you know, come out and face the music if he's a tough guy.
The answer is maybe. Maybe the tough guy decides that, you know, this is not good. Every time I answer, it brings on more answers. It brings on more questions. So let's lay low for a while. I think a tough guy is capable of doing that, somebody who knows what they're doing.
Yeah.
Bob, go ahead. I want to get your thoughts on this.
Sometimes discretion is the better part of valor. Back to the Stefanik point, I think I think she's just taking advantage of it to take pressure off of her with her reaction in support of the insurrection and the heat that she was starting to get. I look at this as a –
a convenient foil for her to take a chunk out of some of it that she doesn't like and change the tune. You know, the other point that I'd be interested in your perspective, you know, Franken, you think about Al Franken and his accuse, and he did what I thought was the noble thing and resigned. And he was the only, you know, he's one of the few that did. If you really think about it, there's been so many other charges against other people. And I think there's been a lot of consternation about whether that was the right decision or not. And I'd be interested in what your thoughts are on how this compares to the Franken situations.
Well, the Franken thing, of course, is he damaged himself by quitting and doing what you call the noble thing. He left the impression that there might be more, and that was why he was resigning. That was mistaken. I think I want to go back to Stefanik if I can for a moment. You know, the Democrats are going to reapportion New York State. The gerrymander is on. And as we have said on this panel, there's a very good chance that Tenney and Stefanik will be put into the same district. So she may be looking at a way in which, at this stage, she can extricate herself from that potential mess. Although I can't believe Stefanik in a fair fight district, if Stefanik and Tenney are in the same in the boxing ring together, that Stefanik, based on her history as a, I don't want to say the word rabid, that would be wrong, would it? As a Republican, Trumper. Would not win. I think she probably would. I hate to say that, but if she runs for governor, I'm with Rosemary. I'd love to see it. That would be great.
Rosemary.
Well, you know,
go ahead, Chris.
I was going to say Al Franken resigned when Chuck Schumer and Kirsten Gillibrand told him it was time to go. And if those two and Joe Biden get to the point where they're willing to tell Andrew Cuomo it's time to go, then he may very well go. You know, I mean, he may hang on. Well,
they're not going to come to that point, Chris, because we have again changed. You pointed out that we're different than we were in the Clinton years. We're different than in those Franken years, too. The Me Too movement was brand new then, and you had only a hint of a woman saying he did it, and that was it. He was convicted without any investigation or trial. We don't do that anymore, and that's more realistic. Women need to be taken seriously, but they don't. They can't be taken at their word, as if there's no defense for the man. And I think we've swung back to the point now where we do look at it a little more carefully. Tara Reid was a good example.
I agree with that somewhat, but if there are more allegations, I would not at all be surprised if Gillibrand and Schumer stepped forward and told them it was time to go, said that they could no longer support him. Yeah.
Yeah. I agree. He cannot handle a drip, drip, drip of many women coming forward. You're absolutely right.
I remember asking him when Gillibrand put herself forward as a potential presidential candidate. You all remember that?
Yep.
And I remember asking the governor about that, and he just chuckled. So that's the kind of thing that gets you into deep trouble with former political allies, that's for sure.
Well, and that goes to something I've been thinking about, Alan, which is, I think over the weekend, it became obvious that the governor does not have that many friends, right?
That's right.
When you rule or govern by intimidation and threats and bullying, when the fear dissipates, you're not left with any allies, you know? They're only, people are generally with Cuomo, they're transactionally or because they fear him, and if they no longer have those two things, he's all alone out there, and I think that's one of the reasons that it becomes harder and harder to see him running for a fourth term.
But he's a political actor, and his political rivals or friends, Speaker Hastie, the majority leader the majority leader in the state senate, go after him now. As we have said, you better kill the king if you're going to go after him. But mm-hmm. Based on the letters that I'm seeing, there's still a huge reservation. There's a huge group of people who really like Cuomo, despite the fact that you may well be right that he's a bully. And I've said it again and again that there's nobody around to defend him because they're all saying, good, now he gets a dose of his own medicine. I think there's part of that.
All right, let's go to some other subjects here. And in our time that we have left, we have a break here in just a few minutes, so we'll try to sneak a story in before we go. One of the things, while we're talking about Chuck Schumer, he came forward yesterday and said, we'll have the votes. They're moving forward on the $1.9 trillion virus relief bill. Schumer says, we'll have the votes. The majority leader announced floor action as soon as today. McConnell predicts Republicans will unite in opposition of that. Alan, what should we make of Senator Schumer's prediction?
My dissertation advisor, Dr. Padilla, used to say to me all the time, Shartok, you better, you just better. And the point really is that Schumer better carry this thing off. No question about it. If he doesn't do it, if President Biden doesn't bring this with him, he loses. This is going to be a horrible thing. I think he's going to do it. I think he's going to get the votes. I think he knows, everybody knows he needs them. The American people, 70% of which are wildly enthusiastic about this. If he can't bring this off now, I don't know what can happen.
Bob Griffin.
I hope he can pull it off because we put a lot of political capital. He's put a lot of political capital. The president has put a lot of political capital into this package. This links with two other stories. You know, we started to talk about the FBI director at the very beginning of the show. And what that links to, and this story links to, though, is also how slow the transition is going. And part of the transition going slow is because they were trying to get this package through and it was deemed more important than setting the new administration. So they have a lot riding on this. I'll be honest. I'm not doubting that Schumer knows his folks better than I do. At the same time, I'm having a hard time getting the vote count.
Rosemary?
Yeah, I said yesterday, and I continue to say it's so close. And, of course, every vote in the Senate is going to be so close. There still seem to be some problems to me. On the other hand, there's so much at stake for Schumer to come out and say we got the votes. He has to know that he does. It's such a risk if he doesn't. He will look so bad if he doesn't that I just am taking it as a good sign that he's willing to state it publicly.
Chris?
On the other
hand. I agree with that.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Alan.
Well, because on the other hand, one device usually has been, getting the train to roll with everybody on it. You say it in the hope that you won't get anybody who deserts you, and it becomes almost a propaganda thing to do it. Now, I agree with you, Rosemary. I think that the chances are, if he said it, because he has been a little too timid for me, he probably means it, and he probably got those votes. But you got Manchin, you got other people like that, whose own political careers come before passing a bill like this.
Chris.
I agree with you. I just don't think he would say it unless he was extraordinarily confident that he's right. I mean, the risk would be just too big. It would be really embarrassing, if he's proven wrong.
All right, Bob. Anything else?
Yeah, no. I'm just thinking that they're. I'd love to know what's going on behind the scenes because they must be whipping like crazy right now. There's a lot of dissension in the ranks, and it's going to be quite a feat to weave, the 50 votes that are required.
All right. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we'll continue and finish up our roundtable panel for this morning. Still have many issues to discuss, and we will address those in just a moment. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Just a reminder, keep them short, keep them to the point, and send them to panel@wamc.org. Alan Shartok, Rosemary Armeo, Chris Churchill, and Bob Griffin make up the group this morning. We'll have our last go-round after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Final call this morning with our panel, Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Chris Churchill, and Bob Griffin. We welcome your thoughts. Let's do a final story here, kind of lump two together. The final issue on the table being coronavirus and the vaccine. In one corner, we have the President of the United States saying that vaccine doses could be available for all adult Americans by the end of May, with the help of a new vaccine on the market now. The president says there will be enough vaccine available for all adults by the end of May as Johnson & Johnson makes a deal to boost supply. That is in on one hand. Meanwhile, our friends in the state of Texas, and I say that lovingly and not just because Chris is on the show, our friends in Texas have said, yes, we've had enough, no more restrictions. Let us worry about trying to get our power back on and improving our water quality. And we don't need any more of this nonsense when it comes to the coronavirus and regulations and telling us to wear masks, et cetera. So with that, Alan, how do those two stories grab you at this moment?
They grab me as being very, very stupid on the part of the progenitors. We know what saves lives, the mask wearing, the election of Joe Biden, who has told everybody to wear a mask and has told everybody to hold on and stay with it. That's what's saving this country. So for these two states of Mississippi and Texas to be doing what they're doing is nothing but political pandering and shows you what happens when political leaders. And Abbott, of course, in Texas has gotten into terrible trouble for the way he handled the recent storms. It makes perfect sense in a Trumpian world that they would do that.
Bob Griffin, one thing that I have learned, I think many of us have learned throughout this pandemic over the last year plus, is that we're not really good at predicting anything. So when the president comes out and says pretty much everyone can have a shot by the end of May, well, gosh, I hope he's right. But I, you know.
Yeah. I do. And I assume what is starting to occur is that the manufacturing capacity is finally in online, and that we're seeing that flow that we were hoping to see earlier. So I take that as I take it as a positive sign. At the same point, even with the vaccine, I mean, the CDC is still advising us to take all of the precautions we can. We're now into this for a year, and I would hate to think that we're going to unwind all of the good work that has been done, you know, right towards the point where we actually see a light at the end of the tunnel. Alan, you said this morning, and I am in absolute complete agreement, that, you know, Abbott's doing this in order to take attention off the fact that they completely screwed up the electric grid and the response to that mass outage out in Texas. And again, this is a pivot away from this, and it's really unfortunate because I think it I think both of them are really important. I also agree with you that I think this is very premature, and will lead to I afraid it's going to lead to another uptick.
Yeah,
we know
at the same
it will,
time.
Right?
At the same time, though, I mean, who doesn't wish that you could just declare it? I mean, you guys know I've been trying to lose weight for a year, and I wish I could just declare that I'm skinny, but, you know, it doesn't work that way.
No.
Well, and
me too.
And also, you just say to yourself, anybody who has been trying to get a shot, and knowing that you have to do a couple of bouts of the Hunger Games to do it, in this state and others, again, I hope that's the case by May. But anyone who has been playing around with the system over the last several weeks probably finds that difficult to believe. Chris, your thoughts?
Well, I think it's kind of similar to what we were saying about Schumer. I don't think Biden would say it unless he was fairly confident he could deliver. You know, and it's tremendous news. I mean, the backstory is this kind of partnership between Merck and Johnson & Johnson and Biden's real kind of authoritative use of the Defense Authorization Act. And it's if it happens, and I think it probably will, it's a great success story. And it gives us hope that this summer will be something close to a normal summer, which is just wonderful news. You know, but the two stories timed together are kind of, Texas opening in March, I think it's kind of like, well, why can't you just wait a couple more months? You know that, with what Biden said yesterday, we can see the light at the end of the tunnel, and it's just a little bit more patience is what's needed now.
Rosemary. Hopefully. Yeah. Rosemary. All right. I don't know where Rosemary went. Yay. Okay.
She's agreeing with us wherever she is. I know that.
Yay.
I think I heard her say Chris was
exactly right.
Exactly right.
Chris, you were spot on.
That's what she always says, so you can just assume.
Well, now that the adult's off the table, can we...
but back to Texas for a second. To your point, Chris, I mean, why do it? I mean, if you just have to hold out for a couple more months, what do you gain? And especially with both what Alan and Chris have been talking about, that you're just opening yourself up for these upticks and more cases and more concern and slowing the whole thing down.
Yeah, when I originally saw the story, my assumption was that he was basically putting the decisions in the control of local officials, and that counties and mayors could still mandate masks and all that sort of thing. But that's actually not the case. I mean, he's also overruled the ability of local officials to act. So it makes it doubly confounding and potentially foolish, I think.
This is a question, is it not, guys, of the way in which, this is a question as to leadership, true political leadership or cowardice. Abbott is a coward. He goes where he thinks people want him to be, and that he'll get credit for doing that. So I can only say that's what this is all about. And it's really disgusting.
Rosemary, you are back. Your thoughts on this?
I'm back. Yeah, I this isn't original, but I like this expression describing what's going on. Biden comes out and says, okay, we're doing it. We got enough vaccine. We're going to get everybody inoculated. And it's like the Republican governors are saying, okay, let's spread this as much as we can before he gets going on it. It really does seem that way. And for people to go along with it is just, it's just so disheartening, because those of us who really do want to end this are also affected by what the people who are going to stop wearing masks, who are going to start going to bars, who are going to just take really stupid actions. If we could just hold on for a few more months, it's almost like we could get this licked. And I don't think we're going to get there. I think this is going to go on for a couple more years now.
Well, and that's the hard part. I mean, as I said, started by saying, the difficulty here is trying to we haven't been good at predicting any part of this. And true, a lot of it was a lack in federal leadership. But we haven't been very good. And those things have changed even since the beginning of this administration. Right, Bob? I mean, we've heard a lot of different things in a relatively short period of time.
Yeah, very much so, Joe. And, somewhere in Texas, Linda Ellaby is throwing things at the radio because, once again, us Northerners are talking about Texas. the point that I would also like to go back to is, Abbott's really trying to wrestle control away from the cities, because the cities in Texas have been going more and more blue. And we saw this with the election. We saw this with the electrical outage in the cold. There appears to be almost a hot warfare between Abbott and Harris County, where Houston is, and Dallas-Fort Worth and the other cities, and it shows. I think a continued major split in Texas. So that is the one issue. The other challenge for Biden and everybody else is, you know, everybody wants to bring good news to the table. And we're into something, you know, I need to quote my older sister who says, you know, I've never lived through one of these before, so I really don't know what's going to happen. And that is so true. And unfortunately, we don't like it when our political leaders say we don't know.
Right.
But it, you know, honestly, that is the truth.
Yeah, that's a good answer, I think. Yeah, I have no idea. Don't know.
Well, but the question is, do they know? Does Abbott know that he is really that this is really outrageous? Or does, for some reason, this political creature believe that, you know, he's right about taking off the masks and opening everything up? So that's my question. What makes a guy, the governor like that, misbehave as badly as he is? Rosemary, what do you think?
Boy, that's a good one. DeSantis, too, is in that category. It's like the guy in Mississippi taking action that almost is like, and especially Abbott, because he's just coming off the whole fiasco with the power outages. And so maybe he's trying to distract from that, but he's gone from one bad decision to another. And it gets away with it. You know, Florida keeps electing one governor more horrible than the next, and so does Texas. Boy, I don't know, Alan. I just don't know.
I have a couple thoughts, Alan. One is that, you know, this does reflect that sort of hyper-Texas exceptionalism, you know, that you know, Texas is always quick to pound their chest and tell the rest of us what we don't know. And this really, in my mind, Alan, it's just, you know, this is individual freedom is in more important than the common good. And when you start to link that with that Texas exceptionalism and the incompetence of the response to the electrical outage, it's a sort of a perfect storm as a way of pivoting to a different
Florida
conversation.
What about Florida and Mississippi then?
What about them? I'm sorry. I mean,
that Texas exceptionalism doesn't apply there, does it?
It doesn't, but I do think that you're starting to see politics among and between the states and the governors too. That this is also a litmus test for the far right. I certainly saw this with a little bit of the CPAC conference, which I watched just a little bit, and then I got sick to my stomach and I couldn't watch it anymore. So I do think that this is. DeSantis, you know, watching what potential rivals could do and making sure that he's to the right.
DeSantis sees himself as a presidential candidate, no question about it. Unbelievable. I've never been able to get to the heart of Florida politics, to be honest with you. The Cuban Hispanic vote means a great deal. In the way that this thing plays out, and as you know, it can be very, very close. I don't know.
All right, we have two letters here that I'd like to end with. Noe says, Texas prides itself on its independence from the federal government. Governor Abbott, like Ted Cruz, is pandering to the disdain for authority, disdain for the Democrats, and is feeding on the Stop the Steal wave. This is political opportunism, plain and simple.
Yeah, amen.
Then Brian says, can the panel please explain, and if you can in a minute, that'd be great, why Texas's current COVID positivity rate is lower than New York. I have my thoughts, but would like to hear from the panel, says Brian.
Well, I mean, isn't that possibly weather related? You know, we know that when you spend a lot more time indoors, COVID rates tend to go up. And this is that recent storm, notwithstanding, this tends to be the time of year in Texas where you can spend a lot of time outdoors and really get out of the house. I mean, that I'm sure that has something to do with it.
Yeah.
You know,
also think that in both Florida and Texas, you're starting to see people playing with numbers as well. And I'll note in the New York Times today, and I watch how they track COVID. They noted that their numbers don't include Ohio, who is no longer collecting death data. So, I mean, there are a lot of people starting to play games with the data.
including Governor Andrew Cuomo.
And back to that. We come full circle this morning.
Yeah.
Well, my thanks to everybody. Thank you for the patience of our panelists in getting everybody on. Thank you to our wonderful engineering team to make it possible. Thank you to the listeners for their patience as well. Alan Chartok, thank you very much.
Thanks, Joe.
Rosemary, Chris, Bob, thank you. We will be right back after this.